and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I'm Chris Austin.
And I'm Luke Parker.
And we have another special episode for you because joining us today is the duty manager of perhaps one of the most famous independent cinemas in the world, or at least the most renowned, the Prince Charles Cinema. And that guest's name is Phil Freitas. Welcome, Phil.
All right, guys. How's it going?
Are you, I wanted to ask, are you Portuguese?
I am. Or, yeah.
You are? I thought so.
Are you?
As am I. Yes.
Lovely. Where are you from?
Well, my mother's from up north, a town called Vilarinho. It's near Chaves, near north.
I'm not mainland. I'm my family's from Madeira.
Okay, from Madeira.
No, nice. I always ask, just in case, if you're from Madeira, we're probably related.
Oh, I see.
There's like 30 people on that island.
Right.
All of them are named José or Maria. You know?
Yeah, it's like that joke
in Godfather. It's like everyone's Pete or Paul or Marie. It's the same thing.
It's so true. I mean, how many Joans are there?
Exactly. You know, it's like...
Oh, excellent. And I'll say as well, Phil is also a filmmaker in his own right. According to IMDb, you have worn many hats. Those include a...
Wow, nobody swept through my IMDb before. I feel like I'm getting
with
doxed
horror.
Or whatever.
So I'll list what they are. So it says location marshal, a camera operator, an art department daily assistant, a production designer, an editor, as well as an actor, writer, producer, and director. One of the films you wrote is called The Rise of the Beast, a.k.a. Devolution. He's laughing.
Oh, I could tell you all about that.
Oh, please
I'm
do.
Very
We'd
interested.
Love to hear it.
It looks like a very interesting project.
Oh, great.
Indeed. It's, well, just to say, it's currently streaming on Amazon Prime. And, of course, the main
I've
reason
not seen
we're speaking...
it, so I can't back it.
Oh, okay then. The experience was that...
It was great. Oh, my God. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
And of course, we're speaking with you today because your latest film is set to be released on April 30th of this month. It's your feature film directorial debut, and that is The Regulars, a film set at the Prince Charles, shot at the Prince Charles, about the Prince Charles, and starring some of the Prince Charles staff. Am I right?
That's correct, yeah. It's mostly amateur actors, like realism, naturalism, was very much the key when I was making it. So I asked a bunch of people to just play themselves or play, you know, roles of annoying customers and patrons. And like, it's very much, everything in it is inspired by and informed by the stuff, even the soundtrack. All of those bands are musicians who work at the cinema. Everything,
awesome.
You are getting the whole kind of experience. Like, you know, because you even if you're kind of regular that like we that talk to us, you might not know what we do outside the cinema. So the film kind of acts as like a showcase. Just kind of it was something I wanted to like really push with that. Like everybody there has art in them, has like a creative outlet, are creatively, you know, driven and have things to share, and there's an opportunity to kind of share. I'm not an actor, but I am in it. I'm the play the main character, but I'll be the first to say I'm not an actor.
And well, how did your colleagues feel about the project? Were they like super excited to be on it, or were they a bit nervous?
It was interesting. It was a bit of both. I think everybody was very encouraging. I'd been talking about it for fucking years. That's the first F-bomb. Because I first got the idea, I've been working at the cinema for about 7 years now, maybe just over. I started, I think, in late 2017. I was hired because they needed staff going into our famous Room Week. I'm sure you guys know about The Room.
Yeah, how often is that? Because it happens a lot, right?
It used to be, the Prince Charles Cinema is very much the home of The Room. It used to screen monthly, and every screening would be one of these interactive screenings. People heckle people, chuck spoons. If you don't know the film, it's very confusing.
But you've had Tommy Wiseau there in the past before as well.
Exactly. He comes down about once or twice a month. Once or twice a year, okay. Tommy Wiseau comes down. It's very funny because usually when I would tell people, I work at the Prince Charles Cinema, they're like, oh, you guys share the room. What's Tommy Wiseau like? And I'm like, and I always say exactly what you expect, a maniac. But it's just weird. It's a weird job to say, like, once or twice a year, Tommy Wiseau comes and just ruins our life. Because it's like, you know, it's like a week or two of like sold out Q&A screenings with the craziest fans, and he's just shilling his underwear in the bar. And, you know, he's a weird one. But yeah, I got hired sort of in prep for one of those, and then just kept me on, and I've kind of worked my way up from front of house to I was an event manager for a while, and then post COVID I became a duty manager.
So you literally came in as an usher?
Yeah. Still do that as well sometimes.
Wow. Well, I want to say, speaking of acting, I want to go back a little, because this all sounds super fun and intriguing, and I want to get to that. I came across a weird coincidence today. So you directed a short film called After the Bell, which was released in 2016.
I did, yeah.
Two-person cast, mm-hmm. and one of the actors in that short film, his name is Ricardo Freitas. Any relation?
Yes, that's my brother, yes.
It's your brother?
Yeah. Who's also in the regular. He's a real actor. He's a professional actor. He's been acting for over 10 years. He's in the film. He played the character of Sam. He's like the duty manager in the film.
Oh,
and
okay.
And I play a sort of an usher. And it's funny, that was my role when I was writing. Now I've almost become that character. Now I'm one of the duty managers at the cinema. But it's interesting. I think you could tell that we're related in the film because we kind of look alike. I hope that's not distracting because we're not related in the film. But when people ask, I'm like, no, it's intentional, you see, because he's like what my character could become. So, you know, we're meant to mirror each other. So it was all intentional.
It's like, De Niro in the latest The Alto Knights movie. It's like, wow, you look so similar.
But he's great. But my brother Rick is a great guy and a really great actor. So.
He is. And I know that because a good friend of mine for many, many years directed a short film starring Ricardo back in 2012 called The Final Slice. Yeah, his name is...
I think I remember that.
Yeah, his name's Sharad Patel, and Sharad's a good friend of mine. He directed a short film that I wrote and starred in called Seated at the Circle around the same time you released After the Bell. But anyway, me and Sharad, Shaz, as I call him, have, like I said, we were close friends for many years, and he would always share whatever he was doing with me for feedback or input or just to keep me updated. And I remember he sent me a link to The Final Slice. I was studying in New York at the time at NYCDA, an acting school. And I went into the library and watched it after a class. It's obviously dated now, and we've grown and improved our craft in so many ways in the years since. But I remember being so impressed by it. And I remember in particular showing my friends and saying to Shaz, this Ricardo fellow is good. I like him. I like how he holds himself and how he presents on camera. So yeah, what a fun link
to small discover world. There. But he's Rick is brilliant, and he deserves better roles sometimes. And that was part of, I knew like if I was going to make something that he was going to be in it, and I wanted to give him a real part, and he's a very important part of The Regulars. Like his character Sam is very much the backbone of the team and very much kind of the thread that kind of keeps the movie together. I think he had one of the strongest arcs in it, and that he's kind of middle management. He's kind of torn between, you know, dealing with like the general manager, his boss, who's kind of coming down on him, and also trying to protect the staff who don't always appreciate that or don't always realize that's what he's doing. Also, my brother's one of the funniest people I know, and he doesn't always get to do comedy. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted him to do a comedy because he's funny, and it's fun to see him kind of let loose a little bit in the film.
Excellent. Well, I'm really looking forward to watching him again. Like
is this your first time working with your brother?
No, I mean, we did that short After the Bell. I didn't even realize it got released because we kind of did it at like a, it was like him and the other actress who was in it. It was like, it was something we did for their showreel, something that looked good, something that we just kind of, we shot it in our flat, like in very, but it turned out pretty good from what I remember. No, I've done a lot of like, I'll give you a little background because you made me sound way more professional than I am. Because I studied film at uni here in London at Westminster. And then I kind of bummed around assistant roles. Location marshalling was like always available. So I did that a lot. I didn't really enjoy it because it's a lot of like just telling people that don't go there. What are you filming? Can't tell you, mate. yeah. But got to work on some big things. I was on Transformers 5. I was on Peter Rabbit. I was on the best one, Phantom Thread, the PTA movie. I'm a big PTA mark. Mm. I love PTA. So it was cool to see him work. And I was, my biggest claim to fame is like, I was at the end of this road and Danny Day-Lewis was just, it was like a night shoot. And he was just, it was just exterior shots of him like driving through the road, driving down the street that they had decorated to look like 50s London or whatever. And I was at the end where he had to stop and he'd have to like pull a Yui to kind of get back. You know, he'd have to do like a 3-point turn and I would kind of give, you know, be like, keep going. All right, you can go.
Yes.
That's the most interaction I had with them. But, you know, same with like a lot of my friends from uni were doing art department gigs and I would, you know, I would help them out. I'd do assistant roles and they were good. Got me some IMDb credits. And then since then, it was just, you know, I always wanted to, you know, writing was my main thing at uni, screenwriting. Not so much directing, but I really liked writing. And sort of, I was writing shorts and I kind of did a lot of half-made shorts. So with Rick, like we started filming one during lockdown that I never finished or released. But it was just ended up just kind of being good exercise because then I would immediately go on to shoot the regulars. So I didn't really have the thing. Usually people build up to a feature, but this is kind of my first go at it. And I just thought, fuck it, like go for broke. Like I'd seen so many of my friends make shorts, fundraise for shorts, you know, spend thousands of pounds, spend weeks of shooting. And in my head, I was just like, I feel like you could make a feature in that time if you kind of, you know, if you had the right setting and idea. And that was kind of maybe the beginning of that wanting to do that. So kind of, it's a bit mental what I did.
Yeah.
In my head, I was like, you know, I want to be doing this and I don't want to just kind of be working my way up in a department I'm not really interested in. And I thought this was like my way of like cutting the line. And I was like, I'll just make a thing and I'll just show people I can make a thing. It turned out to be way harder than I thought, obviously. But I think that was good, like being kind of not naive, maybe a little bit arrogant. I think that paid off.
Well, you mentioned that the regulars has been like a long time in the making. I'm kind of just curious as to what like some of the blockers or obstacles are that you kind of had to face in making the film?
Started writing it in like 2019. I was just kind of playing with the idea. I'd written a few pages. And then, I don't know if you guys remember, in 2020, the whole world shut down. I was stuck at home and I had no excuse. I had nothing to do. And I was like, I'll finish this script. I took it very much bit by bit. If I was like, I'm going to make this, I think I would have maybe been paralyzed by fear. So I'm just like, I'm going to write it. I'm just see if I can write this. I hadn't really written a feature length script. I tried. So writing it was a big obstacle at first, it took about a year with all the drafts, you know, ended up being like a dozen drafts. It would come in waves. It would be like, I could write like 20 pages in a burst and then I would kind of really struggle for a few weeks, but I kind of did it every day. It was like my 9 to 5 during lockdown. So it gave me much needed routine. But then once that was done, I was like, okay, I need to, you know, maybe I'll try and make it. I had gotten permission from the owner to do it. And then it was,
I mean, that would have been a hell of an obstacle.
I think it helped that, like, by that time, by the time I asked, I had been there, you know, nearly like maybe 3, almost 4 years, and I had gained a lot of trust with the building. So, you know, after we kind of ironed out a few details and I kind of showed them what the script was, what it was going to be, you know, they needed to make sure I wasn't shooting like an X-rated thing. And then I had to kind of, and then fundraising was a big thing. So like, I wasn't asking for much. I knew I didn't need much. So I wasn't, you know, I tried a few council art funds, didn't qualify for those, went for a BFI grant, was asking for too little for a feature. Cause I just wanted, my budget was 10 grand. I was like, we can make this movie for 10 grand. If you're going for a BFI like feature, it needs to be like $250,000. I was like, I don't need that. That would be such a waste of money. Like I have the set is built and I've got the costumes, like it's done. And then, so I was like, again, it was very like, I was very like adamant about keeping an independent spirit throughout. And I was like, I wanted do it myself, and I think the idea is strong enough that people want to see this. So we fundraised for it kind of when we were coming back out of lockdown, I think 2021, because we opened and closed loads of time, but I think when we were properly open, I did the fundraiser, and so, and like it was shared through the Prince Charles Cinema newsletter, so it gained a lot of attention, gained a lot of followers. A few celebrities donated to it, like shared it online, which was very helpful. And I think we fundraised for a month or two and didn't hit the goal of 10. We made 5, and then I put in some of my money, and so it was 6 grand with the budget. So we made the feature length film for 6 grand. That was an obstacle as well. Like, firstly, just getting the money. I mean, that was more money than I thought I'd make. And I'm so grateful to anybody who donated and believed in it. And, you know, those people still are following it to this day. But yeah, that was the big obstacle. And then, like, once we had that money, I was like, okay, now how do I do this for 6 grand? Like, I need to really call in every favor. Again, it was part, you know, partly why we had a lot of like amateur actors like me who were like, we're doing it just to do it, just to be there. All the professionals were paid. All the equipment would like rent it, like not, we could, to save money on like renting, we either used equipment we had already or just like some of the camera crew were still at uni and you can rent their equipment for free.
Yes, because renting is extortionate otherwise.
Yeah, it's absolutely criminal. And then the next obstacle was like, I've never made anything this big. So it was like, I was just new to all of it. Like, so, and it was just me and my partner, Dusty, who's also in the movie. She plays Dusty. But she and I produced the movie. And it was just us two, really. And so we kind of had to organized that to make a shooting schedule. Some of the people, you know, we shot over 3 weeks at the cinema. So every night at the cinema, when it would close, we would come in and shoot from like midnight to like 7 a.m. And then we'd clean up and then they would open and, you know, the cinema would be open. And we did that for 3 weeks with weekends off. So like 15 shooting days over 3 weeks. And I was working still during that time. So I would, sometimes I would do my shift and then I would just go right into filming.
It was incredible. And then have to open? And then have to open?
No. I would never do it that way.
Oh, okay.
I would always just go home and sleep. But you'd be kind of bummed after a night of shooting. So I wouldn't, and I'd end up just staying up for a couple more hours, like backing up the footage and just watching everything that we got. And also because I was very wary of time, if anything needed to be reshot, I needed to know right away that we could do it the next day. Mm-hmm. Because again, we only had 3 weeks and we only had certain people for certain days. Some people were traveling into London for it. So I had to put their days together. So there was a lot of organizing. One night we needed like 30 extras. And that was one of the fundraiser perks. Like if you donate a certain amount, it was like, you could be in the movie. And it was like, it's this really cool moment, like kind of halfway through the film. The film is like a day in the life of the ushers. And it's a regular day, but it kind of builds to a like a sing-along type event, which is the Prince Charles Cinema famous for. Mm-hmm. And we don't say the name of the movie, but there's a lot of people dressed as nuns. So you can guess which musical that we're doing.
Sister something?
you'll see. So there's a big like... The Regulars is very much a film that wears its influences on its sleeve. So we do a Goodfellas-style Copacabana shot in the middle of the movie.
Excellent.
Because I wanted that... Because the film is kind of low-key and kind of quiet, but I wanted a moment where you can see how busy and mental it is when an event like that is on. So I tried to get as many extras as possible. And we do this big one shot through the building. Like we start outside, go in through the doors, go down into the bar, and then finally into the screen. And it's just people yelling, and it's just a real showcase for that. And that was, So like organizing was the next big thing. And then while we were filming, it was very much staying awake and staying sane. Because there was always that point. I was a little bit more prepared than the others because we do all-nighters at the cinema. And I love working the all-nighters. I do them all the time because they pay double. so I love doing them. So I'm quite good at staying up all night. But it still was a struggle. You always hit that wall about 5 in the morning where no matter what you're filming, the funniest shit in the world. You're just going to get the giggles and you're going to have to stop a bunch of times. And then, it's a comedy and there's lots of bits that are just funny and that were just difficult to get through. But it was
when you were doing the Goodfellas sequence, did you have your own version of like the Tommy Two Times where someone's like, I'm going to go get the popcorn.
No, but there's other stuff like that. There's a lot of like Easter eggs if you're looking for it. So like later in the film, there's a guy who comes to the kiosk and he's like, oh, I had to leave. We don't allow hot food in the screen. That's like a rule. And he's like, oh, I had to leave my pizza here. And the manager gives it back and there's a slice missing because one of the staff had eaten his slice. And they just get into a whole argument about it where he's like, no, nobody would have done that. And he's like, what do you want me to do? I can't refund a pizza, that kind of thing. But during that Copacabana shot, you can see him arguing with one of the ushers and they're trying to take the pizza box away from them. So there's lots of visual gags, a lot of references, a lot of things. If you're keeping track, I love running jokes. So there's a lot of running jokes through the film. But that was a nightmare shot. But like, again, I knew that shot was coming and I allocated way more time than I needed for it.
Yes.
And I was lucky enough that night before I was working and it was a sing-along, so I just practiced it on my phone. And so by the time the crew came in, I was speaking with my DOP, Ben Rolfe, and I was like, look, this is what I want to do. I don't know if we can do it, but let's try. I already had a backup in my mind of like, if it wasn't going to work, I would do it in separate shots and stitch it together. But I was like, I want to do it in a one shot. And he's like, yeah, we can do it. And we just kind of built it step by step. We did it with no people, and then we did it with one or two people that we would follow through, and then we just kept adding pieces, and then we did it about 7-8 times, and the last two were great, and then I just had to pick during things. Again, you have to just really think, if anybody's listening to this, I'm not the person to give advice, but if you're listening looking for advice, you have to really like think ahead. Like I had a lot of time to write it and be in it. I knew I was going to direct it. I knew I was going to edit it.
Right.
So I wrote with all of that in mind. Right. I wrote with the edit in mind. I knew exactly we're going to, that shot is going to cut here, it's going to cut to that, we don't need that much here, that kind of thing. And it would, and I made the shot list, I planned it all out in advance. The only thing was some rooms were much smaller or became much smaller. It's already a very tight, claustrophobic space, the cinema. But as soon as you put three or four, five camera crew and a sound guy in there and the actors, it gets real tight real quick. But then it's kind of part of it. I mean, like the film is shot in like 4:3 ratio. And that's part of the reasoning for that. One, I just like it's black and white in a box frame. One, because that's kind of the films I'm referencing are kind of those, like those kind of 90s indie American movies like Clerks and Stranger Than Paradise. And I like that kind of aspect ratio, but also I wanted to emphasize the kind of claustrophobic nature of the bit. I wanted you to feel trapped in the film because that's the characters are. It's one location. I mean, multiple rooms, but the whole film is in the cinema all day. And you're trapped with these people for better and for worse.
I have noticed that, you know, like when I lived in London, I used to go to the Prince Charles all the time and I absolutely love it. But, you know, it's a very dense space, isn't it? Very dense.
Definitely, yeah.
I love that. I love that you've considered the aspect ratio as partly telling the story of the space that you're in.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Fucking fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's because me and Luke, we met working at the National History Museum for a while. And how many people there, Luke, would be like, what are we doing? All right, Prince Charles? Yeah, later on. You know, it's literally, like that was their go-to. Yeah. I want to say as well, isn't that fascinating that you, I mean, you wrote this during COVID. Mm-hmm. Isn't it crazy the benefits of time? When you have nothing but time, how you can put that to use. And I've got to say, you have completely shown me up for any of my friends and family that are listening to this. Well, I wrote a short film in the pandemic.
That's great.
I was furloughed. I wrote a short film and, you know, it was like 30 something pages, and it's since been made and going to festivals. And that's great. I've been super proud of that. Thank you. But you wrote a fucking feature film. I'm like, oh shit. You know, honestly, that's so impressive. That's incredible. Well done to you, sir.
Thank you. I mean, I've been very lucky. I've got very, you know, I've got a lot of good people, talented people around me that kind of kept me going when I wanted to give up at every single stage. trust me. But like that, just enough people around me that like believed in it. And I just kept, whenever you're in doubt, I would try and believe the past version of me that thought this was a good idea. You know what I mean? And just I'd like trust that original instinct. And just do it, just finish it. I mean, part of it was just like I was saying, I'd been out of uni for years. I hadn't really done anything, or like done anything that reflected me or what I wanted to say, what I wanted to do. So I was like pushing 30 and I was just like, I need to make something. I need to prove to myself and like any imaginary people around me that I can make a thing. And it can be good. And that I have, it started very personal. It started very much like, I want to write a movie about me in my 20s, which is what the film is. It's very much about these group of ushers. Because it follows like the main character, creatively enough, named Phil, who I play. you know, and I only did that because, again, I was stuck for time when it came to casting. And I was like, look, I can do this. I know I can play myself. And I think it will work. But it was very much about my life and my 20s and my experience in working at the cinema. And I felt like it was something relatable in that everybody can have been in that moment. It's just that like state of limbo that you can fall into like between school and like a quote unquote real career, like what you're going to do for the rest of your life if you figure that out. And you end up kind of working these like dead end jobs. And like, even if it's in an amazing place in an independent venue, like the Prince Charles, Mm-hmm. If you're there long enough, you can get really complacent and you can start resenting it and you can start overlooking all the good stuff it's given you. Mm-hmm. And that's the story in The Regulars. That's the emotional kind of through line. So right. The film is very personal to me. But since it's been finished and since I've been taking it out to cinemas, the story's kind of changed. It's become this bigger thing where, like, obviously the Prince Charles has a loyal following, so the film gets attention because of that. But also you have the recent story where the cinema kind of been fighting with the landlords. Mm-hmm. And you have the, like, Save the PCC petition. And, like, something that people – that's so important to, like, culture and the arts in London is, like, being threatened. And so suddenly the film takes on a different meaning for people where it becomes a way to kind of support those establishments. And the film inadvertently, it's like you can't help it, becomes a kind of celebration of places like that. Not just the Prince Charles. I mean, it's very specific to the Prince Charles, but like any venue, like even obviously the Phoenix or the Genesis or any like great indie cinema that exists in London that are fighting to survive, that are proving that they're doing something right in post-COVID, post-writer strike, not relying on the newer films and like doing the repertory stuff, showing like, you know, the old stuff you're never going to get anywhere else, opportunity to watch classics on the big screen. I think it's really important to people. And like, so the film becomes about that. I hope like, The Regulars add to the conversation in that something that is overlooked. We talk about the PCC and venues like it in this abstract sense of like, we need to protect places like this because it means this to so many people. But something that doesn't get mentioned enough is the staff.
The human element.
Like the people that would be out of a job, the people that kind of do the programming, that give you your popcorn, that talk to you, that kind of give the building its personality, is the reason why people like coming there. So the film is more a tribute to the staff.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. How that can shift as well. Mm-hmm. It goes from something that's deeply personal and blossoms into this love letter and homage to independent cinema and the people who keep it going, staff and customers, that's amazing. And another thing, you know, you've done something that I think is a fantasy for many creative people out there, which is you've turned theoretically the day job and folded it into a creative expression of who you are. You've made a film from that. And that is such an achievement. That's so incredible. You know, and I love what you said there about, because I didn't think of it this way. I thought, if you're in charge of a venue like the Prince Charles, how much that must stoke your creative fire, being around movies every day, holding special events, meeting all sorts of such incredibly creative people, famous people. I imagine that must be so inspiring. And yes, on the one hand, it may very well be. But on the other hand, if you are a creative person, you're watching these films every day and you're seeing these famous visitors and it's like a knock on your head of, okay, what are you doing, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Fascinating.
It's like, after a while you can get it can be very inspiring, but it can be the opposite. It can be like, at some point you get tired of talking about films, and if you want to make them, you have to go out and make one. And like, time is like, no, it's finite, right? Like you gotta try if you can do it. If you take one, again, I'm not the person to take lessons from. I'm just on here because I hope people come and watch The Regulars because I think they'd like it. But I've heard it from a lot of people who have seen it, who have worked on it. They've gone up, like, I think it kind of encouraged them to go and work on things or do the thing they've been thinking about. And it's just like, you don't need anything to make a film. You really don't. Like, you go on a film set and there's a lot of bullshit. There's a lot of like stuff like just there to kind of justify its own existence. So many people, so many equipment, so much money. And you like, we've had other crews, like other shorts and features shoot at the cinema, commercials, and their catering has cost more than The Regulars. You know what I mean? And like, you don't need much. You need an idea. You need a camera and you need a mic. And like now that stuff is easy to get and for it to be good quality, like feature like quality, like with this is all handmade, this is amateur stuff, but it looks very professional and we can screen it in a cinema and it sounds and looks good. And you just, you know, it's the old adages, right? Like you write what you know, use what you have. And I did that very literally. You know, how successfully is up to you. It's subjective. People seem to be enjoying it so far. Like the reviews we've gotten online have been very positive, and like the kind of reactions I've gotten in person have been very positive. But yeah, I really, it wasn't my intention again. Like I wasn't never, I was only making it to satisfy me really. Cause I'm really the only person who has to live with this film. People will see it and forget about it, whatever. But if anybody watching it and then feels like they can make it, make something, that's great. I'd love to see it. And as a viewer, as like a watcher, somebody who likes movies, I want all of it. I want movies from every kind of person, every kind of voice. I want lots of different kinds of movies. And I don't wait for permission. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, and the industry is very much changing where like those doors are just closed. Yeah. Like it's all very gatekeepy and very like insular, and you kind of have to forge your own way in, but there's loads of people wanting to do that, so there's loads of people willing to help you make your thing, and then you help them make their thing, and it just keeps going and going, and then you can just like, I don't have, there's just us behind this, it's just me and like word of mouth. Like I don't have a distributor, I don't have a big production company, I'm just doing it. I'm just like talking to cinemas and I'm like, hey, do you like this? Do you want to show it? And a few have said yes so far. So you don't even need that bit. You don't even need a studio to get you to that bit. You can do it yourself. If it's, again, I'm lucky. Again, I have a little bit of an in because of the cinema and I know that. But if that, you know, maybe that helps me down the line, that'd be great. But you'll have your own specific in, whatever it may be. And it'll be something specific to your story, hopefully, that can kind of get you going. And it doesn't matter. It just like, even that's just dressing. Like you, again, you should just be doing it kind of for yourself at the end of the day. I mean, like this isn't paying any bills yet. Like I'm just doing it because like, I made it, I spent 4 years making it, and now I just want people to see it. And if that's the end of that journey, that's fine. But I just really want people to see it. I want the film to kind of have its day. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, having the Prince Charles be the venue that you're making a film about, yes, I can imagine it can only help considering the genuine global appeal of the venue. However, you didn't just rock up there and ask to make a movie. You put in 7 years.
this was the long, I played the long game here.
Yeah.
I walked in, I was like, one day I'm going to make a movie here.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, I was anticipating that you're going to start a trend here. And very soon, we're going to be seeing films made by cinema staff all over the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I definitely wasn't the first, but like, I'm definitely, you know, popularized again. I mean, we've had a few after I made my film, because we shot it in 2022. So it's been a while, it's been a minute.
Wow.
Yeah, and like since then, two, three staff members have shot short films there, which I'm glad. I'm glad I've opened up the kind of, I've let that be a possibility, or, you know, and the owner to kind of more open to that. Because, yeah, why not? Like, they know the building better than anyone and they can use it in different ways. Like, you know, I made like a comedy drama there. So it very much looked a certain way in my world. Mm-hmm. But when somebody makes like a horror film there, it looks completely different, which I really like as well. But like you said, just there's so many creative people there and it's just, they've all got something to give and it's just, it's great. And this is just like a little piece of that, you know?
Right.
I think something that I really like to look off about this film as well is, I think something that a lot of people will be able to relate to is kind of the trials and tribulations of customer service and dealing with, let's just say difficult customers, put it nicely.
Yes, yes.
And even just like I noticed on the main website for the film, right at the bottom, it just says, this little tagline, the customer is always wrong. And that was that was my mantra when working customer service. Yeah. And I think it's something a lot of people be able to relate to.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that is very much in. I think that was just something we kept saying during the film and it became like the unofficial tagline. But it's perfect because it's just like, it goes both ways in the film because the film is very much like a series of kind of set pieces. It's like very meandering. It's very, it's just a very character piece. It's not like very plot driven. It kind of starts with my character waking up late to work, trying to get out of his front door, and then an oven blocking his door. And like that kind of sets the tone for the day that's filled with like weird stuff that kind of keeps, you know, it's like all these blocks that he keeps, the obstacles he keeps hitting, while he kind of he's struggling with his, you know, his life at that time. But yeah, it's mostly like a bunch of, scenes where the staff is arguing with customers and like they're all based off really experiences either heightened or exactly as they happened. You know, and there's some really funny stuff and there's some annoying stuff, the kind of scary stuff, like kind of the whole spectrum. It was interesting. We had our first public screening at the Genesis Cinema March 14th, and there was a bunch of regular customers from the Prince Charles who came and watched it. And afterwards, they came up to me and they're like, oh, no, which one am I?
You know?
But, like, yeah, I think, you know, I think the film is very much for, like, anyone who's worked in customer service, hospitality, and they can relate to just, God, the boredom, the chaos, and the sheer idiocy you have to deal with sometimes. Like, people just walk in and they just, like, leave logic at the door sometimes. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes it's, like, the staff are just like annoyed and tired and they're just taking it out on the customers.
As Chris said, like we met working in customer service at the Natural History Museum. And I think that if someone made a film about that, it'd be more of a horror film than a comedy.
Oh yeah. And definitely. The score is just screaming children. That's the score of the movie.
See, we're lucky we're not a very child-friendly event. Right. A venue, I mean. There's not a lot of that. So that we get mostly just like, again, just being off Leicester Square, got a lot of drunk arsehole coming in fighting. But yeah.
I mean, you must have stories that couldn't even make it into the movie.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's stories that I'm just like, nobody would believe this.
Yeah.
If I put it in. And some are just like, this is a bit too dark. Like, I can't. Like, but I feel like I did keep the better stuff in the film. I had to cut out a lot, so if I ever make a sequel, I've got ample material.
But there's some
very funny, again, there's like running jokes like through the film, like a question we get asked every day. We have two screens, right? We have the downstairs screen, which is downstairs, and we have the upstairs screen, which is upstairs. And without fail, half the people you sell a ticket to, where you're like, okay, which screen is that? We're like, oh, it's in the downstairs screen. Which way is that? Downstairs. So those are like, that's a running joke in the film. Right. You get all kinds of weird characters. There's a scene, I'd bring it up a lot and I wish I didn't because it's the most crude scene in the movie, but it just makes me laugh. There's a scene where like one of the characters, Flavio, is trying to mop the gent's toilet. And there's just a guy taking a very angry, you know, shit. And it's just great. And that happened to me multiple times where it's just like, you know, I'm just going to leave. I'm just going to, you know, they're doing weird stuff like that. And it's just, or just people like, you know, there's lots of different kinds of characters. Like there's a very funny scene where like a couple is trying to order food and drink at the kiosk. And it's like, you get a lot of like first dates with the Prince Charles and it's like, they don't know each other yet. To like have like know what to order, so they keep asking the other one what they want and it just never goes anywhere. And it's just, you know, like, oh, but you like this, oh, but medium, oh no, but can we split it? And it's just like, just order something, just make a decision. There's lots of stuff like that. In that big Copacabana shot, there's a lot of. I just threw a bunch of those people in there. There's like, I'm on the bar in that scene, and then I'm trying to serve people, and then the guy who's just yelling at me, where are your toilets? Where are your toilets? Where are your toilets? And I'm like, they're right behind you. If you just stopped and turn around, they're right bloody there. Or like, you know, we have a blackboard in the bar area, if you know the Prince Charles, where you can write suggestions, films you want to watch. And the programmer actually like keeps track of them and will put them on. And there's like people that put on really bad suggestions. And like either they're films we show or films we're never going to show, or just crap. Or, you know, or like, or just, or films we can't show, and they just keep putting them on. Like, no, we're not going to show the 8-hour cut of Death Boot. It's not going to happen. It's just, you know, it's just not going to happen. So there's right. lots of that, but it's all very like, I feel, you know, like when you're watching it, you're having a laugh at it, but like, it's all very loving. Like, I don't think anybody would watch the regulars and be like, God damn, he hates working there. Even though yeah, there's a lot of kind of complaining in it, you know,
it's relatable.
Yeah.
And honestly, these days, I don't know, maybe it's my age, I don't know, but the more relatable and universal a film is or its characters, I'm just like, I'm in, you know, like I just the other day, I rewatched A Real Pain with my girlfriend because she hadn't seen it. And I was like, I have been Jesse Eisenberg. I have been, you know, what's his name? Kieran Culkin. Mm-hmm. I have been both these people. And so when you're watching it, you're like, I get you, you know? So that's, yeah.
I see me. Yeah, I mean, I think that's good. I mean, it was kind of something I was worried about with the regular. Obviously, I wanted it to be relatable, but I realized it was very specific, and I was making it very niche. It was very about me and my experiences, and I realized that wasn't going to be every person's experience. But then I remember hearing, God, I'm gonna forget. I think I heard Jordan Peele talking about Lady Bird. So maybe it's like a secondhand thing where I think Greta Gerwig was like in a similar situation where like that movie, Lady Bird, great movie, set in like the early 2000s. And, you know, set in like, I think Sacramento. It's like, it's very specific to like her part, her childhood. And she was worried about that. And either she said it to him or he said it to her, but it was basically like the more specific something is, the more universal it becomes. And that is what I've found. So I just kind of let it be that. And every like people who have watched the film, I've had people from kind of all walks of life. Like you guys like worked in a museum. I work at a pharmacy. I work at a theater. And I'm like, and I know exactly what you're talking about, even though it's a completely different experience. But like, it's something everybody can kind of relate to in a weird way if you've worked that kind of thing. And I think more and more people do work the kind of thing. You know, the job market's not great in London. A lot of people work in like zero-hour jobs and doing shift work, hospitality work, and like any form of that, any form of work where you have to deal with the public, you're gonna get some funny stories.
As well,
if you just put them all together, make a movie. Done. Yeah.
Also, even though we don't like to admit it, we've all probably been those difficult customers as well at some point in our life.
Oh, yeah,
definitely. I try not to be. I think working at the cinema now has made me a better customer. Where like I'm very aware of my like I never leave rubbish. Like take your rubbish with you, please. Like, you know, like we're paid to do it, but like don't make our life any harder than it needs to be. You know, I'm overly grateful. I'm always like, please, thank you, thank you. Because I'm like, there's a line in the movie where like one of the characters, I think Dusty said it, where it's like a lot of people who come in don't realize that the person behind the counter doesn't want to be there. You know what I mean? Like if they had a choice,
right.
They wouldn't be working there, even if it's a great place. So like, you should take that with you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. It, you know, it's funny. It brings to mind. I remember when I complained at a View cinema, I was watching Joker and the staff had to do regular screen checks, which is all well and good. However, every time they opened the door, it was in a corridor.
You get the flood of light?
Yes, and it was like a massive poster out there advertising who knows what, just, you know, enshrined in lights. And I was like, six or seven times I had to like constantly turn. So I complained at the end of the end of the movie. My girlfriend did not like it, so she walked away from me.
Did not like you complaining or did not like the movie?
She didn't like, no, she didn't like me complaining. Yeah. And I was like, well, I'm going to do it. And I went and then I walked up to her and I was like, and here's your free ticket for the for whatever you want to watch next. You know, maybe I was justified in that complaint. I don't know. But another thing I wanted to say as well is, so you've mentioned Goodfellas as like a sequence that you sort of pay homage to. Yeah. Were there any other specific films or filmmakers that inspired you that you had in mind while making The Regulars?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, like, the obvious one is Kevin Smith. I grew up a big Kevin Smith head, Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, all the early stuff is great. And he's very kind of, you know, an inspiring figure growing up. I was like, loved his movie, and I watched his Q&A. A big part of me going to, like, study film was because of him, because he made it seem fun. He made it seem doable. He seemed like a real guy in an unreal world. I mean, he even had I put a little dedication to him in the credits because he's one of like five people I think if I don't encounter, I wouldn't have made it. But yeah, so Clerks was the big thing. I mean, obviously I took very much a page out of his notebook. He did the same thing. He worked at the Quick Stop grocery store and he made an indie film called Clerks. He shot there overnight. He maxed out his credit card. He made it with his friends. And then he took it to Sundance and, you know, turned it into a career. And that's how...
Oh, shit, I didn't know that. Yeah. I've never seen it. Oh,
it's great. Watch Clerks. It's brilliant. And again, it's a small little black and white film. Very funny. Very, very great. Like, really great. Really great, like, 90s, like, Gen X movie, but, like, a great sort of movie about being in your 20s. So that one was an obvious one. So there's lots of references to it in the film. There's, like, a picture... I mean, Kevin Smith is, like... a well-known figure at the cinema. We have a Kevin Smith cubicle in the ladies' toilet. It used to be the gents. That makes more sense if you know that. It used to be the gents, but then we refurbished, it became the ladies. So, but he had a cubicle named after him and there's pictures of him on the wall. And when he comes to the cinema to do Q&A, he'll always ask to see it. And it's like, so there's like, you know, I think there's a throwaway shot. There's like a picture of him on the wall. There's a very famous catchphrase in Clerks, I'm not supposed to be here today. That's said a few times in The Regulars. I mean, the way it just looks, obviously. The feel of it, mine, I think, is very much a different tone. But yeah, that one's very inspirational. Really love Jim Jarmusch. And like, again, some of his early stuff, like Stranger Than Paradise was a big one for me. Again, more that tonally, the film is closer to that. In this really like low-key laid-back way where you just kind of, and also the way it's shot, it's a lot wide where kind of stuff just happens in front of the camera and then they cut. And I tried to kind of emulate that. I would try to do as many scenes in one shot as I could, one for time and, you know, money. It helped me, but I also just like, I thought it worked for the movie. I mean, any kind of like love, like workplace comedy with Empire Records and the big one. And we always do like Rex Manning Day, which is something from the film at the Prince Charles where we show Empire Records. That's a great film about like one about like working a shitty job, but also like working in like an independent venue that is like being overtaken by like the greedy capitalist and they have to rise up and fight them. And it's great.
What's it called? Empire Records.
Empire Records. Yeah. It's a bunch of kids working in a record store. And they're being overtaken by like a Tower record. Again, very outdated. Where the fuck are the record shop?
Right.
So yeah, like, but then there was like, you know, just Martin Scorsese is a big influence on me. Just one of the greatest filmmakers ever. And I kind of always knew I wanted to do like a Goodfellas kind of shot in the movie. So I'm glad I got to do it. Like I mentioned, Paul Thomas Anderson, he's just the greatest. Like, I think The Master might be the best thing ever made. But I think he's brilliant. There's than very.
I actually think Licorice Pizza was the first film I saw at the Prince Charles Cinema. I think.
Really?
Oh shit!
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. That was cool because the way he like premiered the trailer was like not online. He released it to a few cinemas around the world first, and the Prince Charles was one of them. And
oh, so cool.
He sent, and it was like on film, so he sent like little reels. And they would play before, like he looked at our program and he's like, okay, I want it to play before American Graffiti. You know what I mean?
That's fucking
cool. So I got to watch it way before like it dropped online, you know, kind of like a preview, which is just cool. Like PTA is like a big supporter of the cinema.
Yeah.
And he's great. So there's lots of, there's a very specific Boogie Nights reference. There's a shot in Boogie Nights where the camera spins around Marky Mark's room. You know, like I forget what's playing, but you see like a Bruce Lee posters and all the great, and he's like looking himself in the mirror. And then we do that same shot like in the staff room. but like with music playing, it's very dramatic.
Amazing.
But then like things that just kind of, there were things that are intentional like that with like very specific references. I mean, everything I've ever like watched and like kind of fed into how I would writing it, how I was shooting it.
Probably without even being consciously aware of some of it, right?
Definitely. And things that like other people would bring in to it. Like there's a moment in the film that I love. There's like a new girl that starts at the cinema during the day that the regular follows, named Sophie. And she's very much, she's like, you know, kind of the audience's way in, right? So she's an excuse where we can show you around the cinema and it doesn't look weird because she's new. But she had her own kind of arc where she's like, you know, every other job, she's never really connected with people and she kind of finds her people at the cinema. But then the moment where she kind of, the first half of the day, she feels like she keeps messing up and saying the wrong thing and like not getting along with people. But she is just as sort of like creatively frustrated as everybody else. And at the moment where she's cleaning one of the screens by herself, and she noticed the piano in the back of the room. And there was a piano at the back of the room in screen one. We used it for like events and stuff. And she sees it and she like takes off. She like removes the drape and she just played this little theme. This really lovely piece that the actor Bronte Appleby, she wrote for the film. And she played it. And again, like the why I put it in there was like it kind of marked. It's this really sad moment in an otherwise like fun film, and it marks a shift in the day, but also, like I said, kind of add to the whole everybody had something to give here that you're not seeing. But when it came to mixing it, my mixer, Max Schaller, who also works at the cinema, he does this thing where he like drops the background sound and like really pushed the piano and then added these like kind of ethereal like string to it, and it becomes very dreamy. And he said it's like the Harpo Marx moment where like you know, in a Marx Brothers movie, it's like it's all silly, it's all fun, it's all slapsticky, but annoying Harpo with his harp that he would play, and the whole thing would go quiet and like the sound would get really ethereal, really dreamy, and they do these really experimental things with the sound design. And so he brought that element to that moment, you know what I mean? And like lots of things like that. So it became more and more personal. Like people, you know, I wasn't really like sacrilegious with my, like not sacrilegious, I wasn't really like religious about my dialogue. Like I would let people kind of ad-lib around it or rewrite it to sound more like how they would speak, to be more comfortable. And sometimes they would rewrite the whole scene and make it better and like input things, you know, that I would not have thought of and would make it something else. That's kind of something you learn when you're making a film. You guys have made stuff, you know, like it will always change. You can't, like, it's not about trying to keep it, you know, what it was. Exactly. It's about letting it change and just trying to make the best of what you get by the end. So it kind of, it became a mix of influences, one like from movies and filmmakers I loved, and then from like the people I was working with.
Yeah, that amazing. The magic of the collaborative process. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I was very fortunate.
And so Kevin Smith was a major influence on you.
Yeah, definitely.
So have you met him?
I met him several times. Yeah. Could he come into the cinema to do Q&A, late night Q&A, where there's no...
Could he talk
for hours, dude. Oh. Like we don't put a finish time on his Q&A. Like it will go to like 3-4 in the morning. He's great. He'll take every question and he'll basically just catch you up on his life up until that point.
Amazing.
Regardless of if he's showing a film or whatever. I've met him a couple times because I met him while I was like an event manager. So I got to manage some of those events. One of my proudest moments working at the cinema was, as somebody who grew up watching his films, I got to introduce him on stage once. And that was really good. And I did a little spiel, made a few jokes. And he came on stage and he gave me a hug. And that was really nice.
Awesome.
Beforehand, we were just like hanging out. Because he can't hang out in the bar. People were swarming.
So
he hangs out. He like waits in the emergency exit, you know, for me to bring him out. And before that, we were just hanging in there talking about like Beastie Boys and stuff. Like, and it was very normal, very cool. But I haven't seen him since I've made this. And I would really love to get the film in his hand. Like, even like when I was like fundraising and really pushing it online. Like, I'm not really online anymore. Like, I'm not. But like when I was fundraising the film, there was like a social media channel for the film. Mm-hmm. And I was fucking constantly tweeting at him. I was like, you have to know this
100%.
Yes. But he never, you know, he probably gets a million of those a day. So I never really got any attention from that. But I would love... Now that the film's done, next time he comes in to just like hand it, like it's on a USB. I'm like, here, like, please, you don't have to watch it, but like, you know, I did this partly because of you. I'd be very, you know, it'd be great if you could watch it and tell me.
I'm sure that's going to happen.
Maybe.
Incredible. You know, I remember listening to a podcast. It was the DGA podcast, the Directors Guild podcast.
Yeah, I know. I listened to it.
Oh, okay. Did you ever hear the one Kevin James and Werner Herzog?
No, like Kevin James, like the mole cop?
Who?
Kevin Smith or Kevin James?
Sorry, Kevin Smith. I'm talking about Kevin James.
I was like, King of Queens, Kevin James?
No,
I now pronounce you Chuck and Steve. Kevin James? Kevin Smith and Werner Herzog.
Forgive me.
No,
Kevin
that sounds
Smith
an
and
amazing
Werner Herzog. It is fascinating to listen to because it is at times awkward.
I bet.
I mean, Kevin. Yeah,
yeah. You Kevin know, speaking Smith with a guy who once ate his own shoes.
Right. Exactly. Oh, it's a really good listen. I highly recommend.
I will
that.
Watch. I will listen to that.
I don't know. Kevin James and Werner Herzog. That sounds like a good show.
even better. Yeah.
What the fuck would those two talk about?
Oh, Jesus. Well, all right. I mean, I wanted to ask as well. So the film is going to screen at the Phoenix Cinema on the 30th. Is the film, you've already mentioned it screened at Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to screen anywhere else? Will there be a festival run?
So, here's the thing. No. There will be more screening. So, in terms of festival run, like, mm-hmm. that's why... I'm doing this because I finished the film at the end of 2023. In 2024, we fundraised again to take the film to festivals.
Mm-hmm.
We raised like $2,000 to do that. Festivals are expensive for people who don't know. It's like £100 a pop, crazy, even the little ones. And so 2024 was just that, was just me taking it to festivals and not really being right for any of them, it seemed, which was a very frustrating and discouraging experience, if mm-hmm. I'm being honest. But at the beginning of this year, I was just like, well, I don't want that to really be the end of it. Yeah. So I want to see if I can get it screened places. So I'm, like I said, I'm going out there on my own, calling, emailing independent venues and seeing if they want to play it. And I've got 3 confirmed, but I am talking to a few that will, you know, that not on sale yet, but will happen. So like the Genesis was the first, Phoenix is the next one, April 30th. 8:15 p.m. Wednesday night. It's going to be great. I'll be there if you want to throw things at me or whatever. If it's really bad. The next confirmed one is actually in Newcastle, weirdly enough, which will be fun. It's the first show outside of London. It's at the Star and Shadow, which is great, like volunteer-run indie cinema. And I'll be doing a Q&A there. So I'll be going, that's at the end of May. That's May 31st. If anybody up north is listening to this, or anybody in Newcastle, please come. That'd be nice. But yeah, so those two confirmed, but there'll be more. So if anybody is keeping track, go to theregularfilm.com. There's like a trailer, obviously, on the page. There's like a making of. I mean, I've kind of said everything here, but there's more to it on the website. There's a contact page if you want to shoot me an email as well. But there's a screening page, and you can see those two are on it. Past screenings are on it, and I'm updating that whenever there's a new screening. Two right now as we're recording, but hopefully there'll be more. I'll just try and do a little run over the summer, just kind of get into as many cinemas as possible, let as many people see it as possible, and we'll see where it goes from there. If it just, you know, I didn't want to just throw it on Prime, you know, which you can do, which some people might see it, which is fine. It might end up there, but like, I think it would have just been lost in the abyss. And this is kind of a film about cinema. I think it'd be nice if people got the opportunity to watch it in a cinema. Sure. There's a lot of moments where you're watching people in a screen. So it's a very reflective moment where you're watching people watch a screen and then almost like looking back at you and your kind of experience while you're watching it. So I think it's part of it. It's part of this communal. It's a very like communal movie, I think. It's a good hangout movie. So the optimum way to watch it is like with a group of people who kind of know what we're talking about, you know? If you know, you know.
Absolutely. Well, I want to say I think you're doing the right thing. And I want to say a massive thank you for your time today.
Yeah.
You're welcome. My time is not very valuable. I'm happy to talk to you guys. It was lovely, lovely talking with you. You know what? It was a really fun throwback. Not even throwback for me, because I have not whipped this microphone out and need headphones now in quite a while. I used to be the co-host of the Prince Charles Cinema. Had a podcast, still had the podcast called, check out, it's called the Pod Charles Cinecast.
I've heard of this.
And I used to do it with my friend, good friend Jonathan Foster, who's also a musician. A lot of his music is in the film. He goes by the name Tool. But he's also a character in the film. Again, he kind of plays a version of himself. He's the head of PR at the cinema. But he started the podcast right before COVID, like 2019. And I'd been on it a few times because it would always be like a guest. You know, it would always be like a different usher where he would talk to. And then like he asked me to be like a kind of recurring host, a regular host. Again, right before lockdown. So we went into lockdown and we ended up doing it every week on over Zoom and stuff. And again, it was a thing that kind of gave us routine and kept us sane in a very chaotic, weird time. But it was, we had a great time. Like, so it started very much as like talking about the program. But then when we didn't have a program, we just would talk about films we wanted to talk about. We would do like kind of arcs. We'd get really weird and do like very meta concept episode. Like every Christmas we would do a Die Hard episode where we were in the movie while we were recording our review of the movie. And we did that every year. We did lots of stuff like that. It was a very weird podcast. It got very weird, but I loved it. Like, it's worth going back. Like, the beginning of this year, I decided to take a break from it to kind of, you know, focus on other things. So there hadn't been, I'm not sure if Jonathan will continue at some point, but like all that stuff is on Spotify and Apple and wherever you listen to it. But yeah, this was a nice sort of throwback to that because I did that every week for like 4 years.
Hell yeah.
That's cool, man. So
I think we need to go back and listen to it. And listen, not to invite ourselves, but if ever you want guests, definitely gonna pitch you guys to join.
How long have you guys been doing Phoenix Cinema? Did you guys work at the? How did it work? Did you work at the Phoenix? Are you do this like out front?
Not at all. Not at all. I wanted to do a film podcast, mm-hmm. and I thought, yeah, but about what? You know, I just you know what I mean? Like, I just choose the films I want to talk about. And I thought it would be great to attach myself to a venue where there is just endless content. Whatever sure. we talk about is yeah, whatever this venue programs. And so in full like disclosure, it was a crapshoot. I reached out to a bunch of venues, and Zaylin, the manager of the Phoenix, was so gracious and
yeah, he's great.
So trustful, and was like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, okay.
You sure?
Should I send you a test pilot nah. episode? He went, sure. So that was, you know, that was amazing. And
did
so,
you
yeah,
already
so
have Luke on board?
I came this a bit actually, later on, didn't I? Yeah.
Yeah, this started with a couple of friends. We have a film club, a big international film club that cool. you're welcome to join anytime. We all go round and we choose a film, and then we go on a platform and we talk about it. But I started it with them. They're in the States. And then they sort of got other commitments. They drifted away from it. And Luke, who's also part of the film club, you know, got drafted in and saved the fucking show, to be honest with you.
Does Luke do all the hard work?
No, Chris does all the hard work. That's for sure.
Oh, that's nice of you to say.
One of you would always go do it. You know what I mean? Like when I did the PCC podcast, Jonathan yeah. would research and edit every episode, and I would just come in and derail it as much as possible. No. Gotta be funny.
Are you the
gotta be funny.
Chris is the backbone yeah. of this thing. That's for sure.
Good.
Oh,
I'm just here.
He's
got someone to talk to.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all.
How long have you guys been doing it?
This began in February of last year.
No.
2024. So it's been going on for a while now.
I've
yeah,
been
and,
in it since July, I think. June, July time.
Oh, since July. Yeah, okay, yeah. And you know, it's one of those things where you slowly, as you do it, you start to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the sound
yeah,
all of a sudden becomes
go.
Better.
Yeah,
and, yeah, yeah.
Come clean. Like, whoa, what happened? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But so, no, yeah, I mean, maybe. Like, I would, you know, you invited me on, so I checked you out. But if I didn't know the Phoenix had a podcast, it looked like you got, like, a lot of...
Mm-hmm.
Like real, like I'm like, oh, I'm not a real professional. I'm like you've had like real professionals, like award winning people. Like how
we've had some good guests on.
Yeah, how do you do that? Do you like contact like the distributor, or like do they come with their films?
Kind of snowballed, didn't it?
It snowballed. It's a mixture of things, actually, Phil. We so I sign up to IMDb Pro, which is, you know, a great service to have because it gives you the contact details of every agent or manager in the business. So if there's anyone we want to talk to, I know who to email. So that's a good first start. Many of them don't respond, but some do. And it really started to snowball when Dexter Fletcher, actor, director,
yeah,
Dexter
yeah, yeah,
Fletcher
I listened to
came
some
on
of
the
that. That was really fun.
And that dude was... I used to work in a West End theater, the Harold Pinter. One of the women who hired me, she was my supervisor, Kim. One day she texts my girlfriend, because my girlfriend still works for the company, and said, Chris, still doing the Phoenix Cinema podcast? I know Dexter Fletcher. We have the same personal trainer. He used to go to the Phoenix Cinema. We talk. I mentioned the podcast. He'd like to join. And I thought... Fuck off. I thought, no.
Get the fuck
I was
out
like,
of
yeah,
here.
Get the fuck out of here. I was like, yeah, listen, we'd love Dexter to come on. Let him know we'd love to have him on. And I thought, not going to happen.
Never going to happen.
Dude, yeah. He came on. He gave his time. And since then, it's kind of become, you know, we love film music. So we've had
a lot of film composers.
Yeah. So God willing, this can continue for a while because we're really, really enjoying it.
Cool. And then in between, you guys, like, do you talk about the program or you guys
exactly
do you just like pick a film that month, that week, and you're like, talk about
yes.
it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Whatever the Phoenix Cinema show, and you just pick yeah. one. You probably do
only
one on average,
the
like
Phoenix
every fortnight, I'd say, on average.
Cool.
Yeah. So, we mentioned Alto Nights earlier. That would have been maybe that's going to release right before this, I think.
Was it any good?
What, the Alto Nights?
Yeah, was it any good?
Listen, we differ.
Here we go.
I liked it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I just thought it was,
Robert
I
De Niro
is
not listening,
good.
Man. You can say yeah. whatever you want.
He's definitely not listening. Yeah, no.
He doesn't
we
know
can
what
slate
a
him.
Podcast
we can...
is. Exactly. He's old as shit.
Exactly. No, I really enjoyed it. And if you're a Scorsese fan, Phil.
Yeah, because it's written by the dude who wrote Nicholas Pileggi, right? By the Goodfellas guy.
Exactly. And you know, I actually watched The Irishman at the Prince Charles. If The Irishman...
I love The Irishman.
Oh my God.
I'm in a minority here, but I love
it. No. I think it's great too.
Yeah, thank you.
Great.
Thank you both.
Like we mentioned it on our Alto Night, it's a film made by old men, so it has that slow pace to it, which mm-hmm. is fine, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But if The Irishman is like Scorsese's final say on the gangster genre, mm-hmm. I think The Alto Night is the final say on the gangster genre by De Niro. And that makes it worth your time, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's still, even though I wasn't a big fan of it, it's still definitely worth watching. If you're a fan.
It looked like fun. Like, I watched the trailer and I was like, even if this is like a middle of the road gangster movie, I'm down.
Which it is.
Yeah.
De Niro playing two people that are kind of the same but aren't meant to be, it's great.
Yeah, it's like if you ever watch Goodfellas or Casino, now we get a chance to see De Niro play the Pesci side of things as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Perfect. Yeah.
So yeah.
That was the last thing I watched at the cinema actually. It was Ricardo's birthday recently and I took him to the PTC because we were showing Goodfellas, one of our favorite films, on like a 35mm print, and I hadn't seen it in years, and it was just it was great. It was really great.
The energy of that movie.
Yeah. That reminds me, weird side note before I get out of here. Like, you were talking about influences and talking about Goodfellas. There's weird influences that I'll say and you'll be like, what the fuck? Like, Star Wars was a huge influence on the Regulars. You'll see why when you watch it. There's lots, you know, like, there's just lots of, there's like a bit too many, like, you know, like, I like Star Wars, but like, you know, like, again, it's a reference to Clerks, because there's a very famous scene in Clerks where they argue about this really pedantic thing in the Star Wars universe. And I did my own version of that because those were real conversations I had.
Right.
And then I did another scene where like it was a happy accident where like a projectionist told me this really gross story about something he did in a screen. that I was like, I have to put that in the movie. And in that story, the Phantom Menace is playing. So it's this weird thing, like, you know, like people might not see it, but these are things that were in my head. Spider-Man 2, the Tobey Maguire, Sam Raimi film. There's a bit of that in there. Like, there's a very specific moment that referenced in there. And it's just like, again, maybe it's like for people like maybe in my age bracket who kind of grew, you know, it's about the right age where they're nostalgic for that kind of thing and they'll appreciate those very specific references. You know, it's a weird obstacle I had, a weird problem I had. All my writing before The Regulars had tons of movie references in it. Like, I just went mental. It was like very Tarantino-esque, you know, like just going fucking crazy. I thought that's how people talked. But then I wrote The Regulars and there weren't any. I realized I just didn't do it because I was just not really thinking about that. And then so I had to go back in and kind of be like, oh, maybe we could put in a scene where they're talking about that, or just like, oh, maybe that line, you could reference that. And then I got a lot of them out the way. There's a scene where like my character and Dusty's character are sorting posters. So we're just like name dropping films, like, oh, do we still need this? And we're just talking shit about those films we're going. But yeah, it's again, like the one thing about the communal aspect to it. Mm-hmm. It feels like what you just said to me before we started recording, Chris, where you're like a bunch of mates like sitting around the pub talking about movies. Right. The Regular kind of feels like that as well, like you're just hanging out with a bunch of friends.
Sounds
not
great.
Desperately trying not to work and just talk about trying to avoid work and talk about movies.
Well, that's amazing, Phil. And honestly, I can't wait to see it. The Regulars,
are you guys gonna come?
We've been invited. I don't know if I can make it.
Yeah, midweek's not good at the moment.
Honestly, I feel such a shame. But I do have every intention of seeing it.
No
for
worries.
Sure.
I'll keep you updated with screening.
Please do.
And I can send you guys a screener as well.
Yeah, no, please do, because I really want to see it. And and when I do see it, and if you can let me know where and when it will screen, I will absolutely reach out to you and we'll let you know our thoughts. Honestly,
yes,
I'm so
please.
Excited for this.
I just want to say good luck, you know, with where this project takes you. You know, it's really, really cool.
Thanks, for sure. Yeah. And for all your future endeavors as well.
Thank you. Yeah, hopefully maybe I'll be back here in a few years with another film.
Absolutely. Listen, you're welcome back anytime.
That'd be 100%.
Great. Yeah. No, you got you. All right, guys. Great. Thank you for your time, really. I really appreciate you having
you're
me.
You're welcome,
on.
Sir. Anytime. Yeah. All right. Well, our music is by Stefan Krieger. You can find more of his tremendous work on stefan-krieger.com. And our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. Do make sure you continue to show your support for independent cinema venues by heading to the Phoenix Cinema to watch The Regulars on April 30th. And after you've done that, why not head to the Prince Charles Cinema to follow that up with whatever they are programming and make it a perfect double feature day. For instance, Casino, one of my favorite films of all time, is showing in 35mm on that same day. Why not do that?
Why not? Perfect. You have nothing better to do. Come watch these movies. Please buy a ticket to The Regulars.
100%. Bye for now.